Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Downright Upright Show, the place to go to hear out loud and proud what Minnesotans are thinking. And I am your host, Philip Anthony. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope, and we hope, that you're doing what?
Fantabulous!
Yes, we do. And fantabulous is fantastic and fabulous, put together twice as nice. And saves time, too.
It does.
Absolutely.
And as you may be well aware, this is the first Saturday of April. So I have my two amazing co-hosts with me today. They're waving. If you're listening on the radio, they're waving.
Hello. Not great for radio when you wave. But.
Good point.
Waving on radio doesn't work too well, but I'm waving too. Okay, so again, I'll introduce them. We have Austin Ballhagen.
Hello.
And Matt Amundson.
Howdy, howdy.
And they have been on my show every month going back till, I don't even know now how long it's been.
November? Was it December? November? Something
sounds
like that.
Something.
And they were also,
it's been a bit.
You also guest individually on the show.
That is true.
Yeah. You just keep coming back.
Yeah, you keep coming back for more
Can't
torture.
Get rid of
bad penny, yeah.
Mm-hmm. More torture. Anyway, and also, a couple of days ago, it was my birthday.
Birthday!
Ooh, happy birthday!
Woo-hoo! I know. I just turned 32.
And oh my gosh! Again?
for the 34th.
Twice as nice.
That's cute. I love it. Anyway, I love them. They are amazing. And my birthday is April 4th. So if you want to send cards and letters, go right ahead. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway. So I introduced my guests, and we are going to talk about some topics today that are,
relevant.
Relevant, but they're, irking me kind of too, because I was talking to Austin in the car, and you saw how...
passion.
It was a
lot of passion.
A lot of passion.
Uh-huh.
So breaking news is that it seems that the ex-president, Mr. Voldemort, the name that shall not be mentioned, he posted a picture of President Biden bound and gagged in the back of a pickup truck that says Trump 2024. Now, I have no words, but do you want to say something about that? I thought they...
Oh, I have lots of words, but... some of them are probably not radio appropriate, so.
Isn't that so amazing that he would do something so awful? I mean, is that going to...
Typical.
Yeah.
I'd say that's on brand.
Why can't he just be, run as a normal person? If President Biden had done that, just think about that.
First of all, he wouldn't.
He wouldn't.
But, if I could just jump in really quickly. Here's a concern that I have is that is typical behavior for him. I'm like, nothing shocks me anymore, and just the way in which he approaches his candidacy, the way in which he talks to his constituents, it's
egging them on, you mean?
He eggs them on. Yep. And he makes them excitable and just, people just, a lot of them just like eat up his lies and you can trace all the hypocrisy and all the lies, attribute to everything. It's amazing. And then so when I'm never surprised by something new that happens because we're just bombarded with it. And the fact that there are still so many people that are so pro him just makes me very concerned for this November.
Yeah.
And I need to clarify. It makes me more concerned just for the world in general, not just for the election, because regardless of the results of the election, it's not going to be great. Like January 6th from a few years ago, that was one big event. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist and I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I don't see that as the first and only time that's going to happen with regard to just how he how he approaches
it's so sad.
Himself in the world.
Matt, I am so scared.
Me too.
This country.
Me too.
I'm hoping that the people out there, if you're going to go vote out there, ladies and gentlemen, go vote with people, other people, bring them along. The more, the merrier. Because
come on, people now. Smile on your brother.
Everybody get together.
Try to love one another
right now.
Now.
Right now. Yes. Did you want to piggyback on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said, and I think you bring up a great point in terms of like normalizing this and how this is throwing red meat to his base. We have many ways in this country for people to exercise their opinions, to make political, participate in that process, whether it be through voting, protesting, writing a letter to the editor, petitioning, whatever you want to do. There's a lot of ways to do it that do not involve any sort of like violence or vigilante justice, which is what I think his supporters see that as. But I will also add that I think that there's also an element that he throws these bombastic statements out there because while he's making his right hand dance and showing you, ooh, look at this crazy thing I'm doing, his left hand is doing things behind the scenes that are really awful and really evil, and they don't get attention because he draws all this media spotlight onto, look at this wild thing that I said or did. Yeah. So it's yeah. I think his campaign is smarter in that respect than yes. what we often credit him.
Yeah, but there's absolutely. There's a lot of other things. This was just one thing, though, you guys. Yeah.
One of many.
The bloodbath comment when mm-hmm. they claim he was talking about the auto industry.
Yeah.
And that.
Yeah.
If you could use other words
right.
for that.
Right.
Because after January 6th, we don't need any more bloodbaths.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is that's out now, I'm hearing, is that the judge in his case, he's threatening the judge and his daughter.
Yeah. And you know who follows that? All of his constituents, all of his followers, they're going to listen to that, and then they're going to...
Yes.
They're his attack dogs.
Yeah, but Matt, if you and I had done that...
Canceled.
We were on trial,
yep.
and we told the judge we were going to do this, that, and the other thing to him and his daughter.
Right.
Do you think your ass would be sitting in the... in the courtroom, they'd lock you up in an
absolutely.
Instant.
Absolutely. Could we then run for office? Absolutely not. So why can he? Oh, your mic just slipped away from you.
Oh, it does that.
It's running away.
So it's like, come back.
It's like, we're going to give you a break, Philip. I think what I really need to see our politicians do is to speak to that, speak against that, call attention to it and not give him that attention that he's asking for and that he's getting from these other places. That's what scares me. You're in these positions of power. Utilize that for good. With great power comes great responsibility, right?
Absolutely.
And to be totally honest, with power comes oppression. And that is what he is doing. He is using his power to oppress, and he's going to continue to do that.
Yeah, but he has to realize how, the idea...
Well, he realizes what he's doing.
Yeah, but the idea, though, for me, though, Matt, is that if you're running for president, especially in the general, you try to move more to the middle to get those independent voters that normally normal people go after. He's alienating the Nikki Haley. He said, don't vote for me if you support Nikki. I mean, isn't the idea to win the election? I mean, I don't get it. So... I think he's just a very different person.
Very different person.
Well, and he's forcing the work, right? So you now have Laura Trump, who just week is saying, no, Nikki Haley voters, there's always a place for you here at the RNC.
Someone else is going to clean
Please
up.
Please come join. Yeah, I mean, she's having to put that message out, to do cleanup. Like you said, they're cleaning up. You know, he's saying one thing, and his team is scrambling to fill the gaps in elsewhere.
Speaking of Laura Trump, she's dropping a single, I think, either today or tomorrow.
Me.
No, for real.
And you know what that's going to do, supposedly? Raise money for you-know-who. Just so you know. And she can't sing that great, by the way. And I'm not saying it because I'm being mean. I've heard better singers than her. She's very average. She can carry a tune.
Doesn't matter how great of a singer she is.
She can carry it, as my mother used to say, she can carry a tune in a colander. Anyway.
On that, too, that's just like, the Bible. The Bible that you came out with.
God bless America,
oh my
Bible.
Gosh.
Lord. I cannot with this, man.
You're picking up all these things.
First of all, like, your target audience, first of all, probably can't afford these $60 Bibles, leather-bound Bibles with American flags on them. Like, and to claim that the Bible is American, just by that moniker, and it's just
And Lee Greenwood's song is in there. But, the thing is, that's a great point, Matt. I'm so glad you brought this up because I was thinking about talking about it today, but you brought it up, so I'm going to talk about it. All these people complaining about inflation. They don't have any money.
Yes.
They are poor and da 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 da. They go out and spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on Trump flags and shirts and bumper stickers and
vodka and steaks and NFTs and shoes and coins.
Everything. Lara Trump single. I mean, you could go on.
I don't remember if it was Donald Trump Jr. or Eric, one of his minions, said he gave some speech about, if every one of my dad's followers, or like fans put in $10, that's going to give us enough, whatever. People are giving enough money, plenty of money, too much money in many cases. And here's the other thing. Here's the thing of all of this that bugs is Donald Trump talks about his great wealth. You know, he's well known for being this billionaire or whatever. So why are you asking for all this money? Why are people giving him all this money when he's bragging about how much money he already has? I'm like, that alone, don't you see the hypocrisy?
Well,
I just don't get it.
There's been a ton of people that have come forward saying they donated money and they agreed to donate, a one-time $10 fee, and then we're getting charged for months. And the process of trying to get that canceled was a nightmare.
Really?
So it's really deceptive marketing. Let's start there.
Shocker.
Right? I know. But also, we all know somebody from high school or growing up that has an MLM that's selling you crap on the side.
Yes.
Those people, generally, you don't buy things from. Like, that's a lesson everybody knows.
I have a great, helpful, handy hint from Philip Anthony. If you're struggling financially and you're complaining that the steak is expensive and your cookies are expensive and your ho-hos are expensive, you know what you do? Don't buy paraphernalia that you don't need. Just saying. Anyway,
amen.
I'm going to move on.
Okay, good. we need to.
Yeah, well, this is kind of, laterally, sidetracking about Trump, but it's about Ronna McDaniel. You know who she is, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She used to be the RNC chairman, but she got thrown out because Laura Trump took over, because you have to have Trump people in there. You can't have, regular Republicans. So former RNC chairman Ronna McDaniel, who was recently hired by NBC and its cable cousin MSNBC as a paid contributor in order to supposedly make the network more fair and balanced, has been dropped after a near rebellion by its most influential hosts, such as, I'm going to give you a list, Chuck Todd, Rachel Maddow, Chuck Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski, Joy Reid, Jen Psaki, Stephanie Ruhle, and a myriad of others, who stated that having an anti-democracy election denier as a paid contributor would threaten the credibility of NBC. Rashida Jones, the head of MSNBC, reportedly backed the decision to hire McDaniel, but in the face of the uproar, she let it be known that they would not be required to have her on their shows, but apparently that was not satisfying to the stable of stars that were on NBC.
Sure.
So she got canned. So how did the powers that be at NBC and NBC get this wrong? Who wants to pick up that ball there? How did you get it wrong? I mean, I would have just, no, she's not the one. Mm-hmm. Maybe Chris Christie, a normal Republican, or, Nikki Haley even would, I don't know if she'd want to.
It's a loaded definition of normal.
Yeah.
Well, when you're
saying. But I know what you're saying.
I'm picking mainstream Republicans.
Yeah, mainstream.
Election-denying Republicans.
Right.
Like Chris Christie knows the election was not stolen.
Yes, thank you, Chris Christie, for saying that. That is
I don't agree with anything that he ever did or any of his policies, but the guy believes in democracy at least.
Yeah.
So that would be a great person to have on there. Anybody else want to pick up on this?
They've hired Michael Steele is a contributor on MSNBC frequently. So there's certainly, I think, some degree and level of precedent in terms of looking for people that might be on the job market. With that said, I do think there's a significant difference between Ronna McDaniel and somebody like Michael Steele. The fact that, and you hit the nail on the head with, not only is she an election denier, but in her role at the RNC, actively took steps to try and overturn the election, to sell this election lie to people. She was in a position of power to challenge that, to fight back on that narrative, and chose not to. She did everything Donald Trump asked her to do. Wasn't good enough. I would classify her as a Trump sycophant, and I'm sure she's probably in a really low place right now because she did what she was supposed to and got tossed out. But that is the nature of working with a man like Donald Trump. And we've heard that from plenty of other people that have worked in his administration or adjacent to his administration where, you know, when failure happens, they get blamed. So yeah, yeah, yeah. I credit the people that stood up at MSNBC for speaking out because it takes tremendous courage to speak out against, you yes. know, the network that has hired you,
absolutely.
The network you're under contract with. So.
Absolutely. And Chuck Todd, thank you very much. You were the first one. He broke the ceiling when he said that because before that, everybody was just quiet. But then he started. It's almost like a house of cards. You know, when one person says it, then, oh, yeah, that's right. The other person. And then the cards just start falling. Sure. And that's absolutely. What happened. So Chuck. Love you. Thank
yeah,
you.
Keep it going.
Keep it going, Chuck. Mm-hmm. So President Biden attended a fundraiser along with former Presidents Clinton, remember him,
mm-hmm.
and Obama at Radio City Hall, Music Hall in New York City, which raised $26 million wow. for the campaign. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But the showstopper came out of the mouth of the president when he stated, now I'm going to quote what he said, a little levity here because it was cute. He said, quote, this guy wants to get rid of not only Roe versus Wade, which he brags about having done. He wants to get rid of the ability of anyone anywhere in America to have the right to choose. All the things he's doing are so old. And then he got a little smattering of laughter because old, the word old. Then he said, a little old and out of shape. He used that too. Because out of shape is kind of describing a you-know-who. So, any comments about that quote? I think it's then the crowd erupted after that.
Uh-huh.
But what do you guys think about President Biden? And the State of the Union really proved to me that he's not demented. You know, the media was trying to, the right-wing media is trying to portray him. He's doing a great job, I think. But what do you guys think?
I do think there's a lot of very problematic language around Biden. I think, and that's also even in and among his party, which is concerning. And I'm not saying that I'm the biggest Biden fan. I'm not. But also, he's a much better option than Trump. And if he's going to be our Democratic nominee, I'm going to vote for him, just period. So I don't think there's anything that he's doing or saying right now that has made me so concerned to be like, we need someone else in this particular spot. And when he says things like that, you know, in a jesting sort of way,
he's joking
against
about
Trump.
Himself, yeah.
And you know, like he jokes about himself, and I feel like what I appreciate about that is that he has that awareness and understanding of what people are saying about him, and he's like, but he's still doing his job, and he's still going about it in the best way that he can, and he has a lot of good people around him. So like,
yes.
I still trust and believe in him as the best I can. Not my favorite candidate, but he's the candidate we have.
I agree with you with that because I was talking about this with Austin. We yeah. do a lot of talking in the car.
We do a lot of talking in the car.
The car gets us going. Anyway, but I was talking about the fact that he had mentioned President Biden, that he was a transitional president, that he was going to come, you know, get rid of the trash and then, you know, open the door for another person to come in. But that didn't happen. But hey, you know, it's the kind old man or the insurrectionist election denying old man.
Yeah.
So you have a choice.
Absolutely.
And if you want a dictatorship, if you don't want to be able to vote anymore, because I really don't think he'll ever leave office if he gets in. He almost didn't the first time. So what makes you think he's not
dictator for a day, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Day one, we'll I think see. He had mentioned. Yeah.
No
so
kidding.
Moving on to somebody else, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. officially announces VP pick Nicole Shanahan, who was a California lawyer and philanthropist, tongue twister. Now that he has chosen his running mate, he will be eligible to be placed on the ballot in a number of states because you have to be – some states you have to be have a VP to be on the ballot. Do you think his third-party run will hurt the president or hurt Voldemort? Who wants to pick this up? Anybody?
I think there is always, to a degree, a certain number of people that will vote for a third-party candidate. Regardless, it doesn't matter who it is. They want a third option. That is just who they are. That's their personality. And in this country, they have that right to do that. He floated a lot of hubbub in leading up proceeding to announcing his VP pick, and it's going to be a big name, and I'm going to draw all these Democratic voters, and it's going to be great. You picked a VP that bought her way onto your ticket because she contributed, you know, X amount to your campaign. That's what it boils down to. You know, I don't think this is any way, shape, or form a serious challenge that President Biden would need to worry about.
Yeah, I don't think he should
about.
Worry too much. Anyway, so did you want to say something really quick with getting it close to a break?
Sorry.
I worry about that split vote, though. That's what concerns
me.
Yeah,
me too.
Regardless.
Absolutely.
I agree with you on the, they're going to get votes regardless. I just worry about how much.
Well.
That's fair. That's fair.
We're going to take a short break. Yeah. We're going to come back in with more current events. This is the Downright Upright Show. My name is Philip Anthony on AM 950.
Whoop, whoop,
the progressive voice of Minnesota. Put a little love in your heart.
You see, it's getting late. Oh, please don't hesitate. Put a little love in your heart. And the
give me love, give me peace on earth, give me life,
give me life, give me.
Oh, I love this song. Anyway, welcome
back.
You're
collecting quite the soundtrack for the show. I love it.
I know.
Yeah.
The theme, you see, it's a common theme, love.
Yes, you need like a peace. Spotify playlist you got to make, I think, at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The soundtrack of the Downright Upright Show. Just put a bunch of songs that, you know, are
love,
inspiring.
Love, kindness.
Yeah. Welcome back, 100%. By the way, to the Downright Upright Show. I am Philip Anthony with my two co-hosts, as usual, on the first Saturday of every month. And so now we're going to talk about one more down thing, and then we're going to go uplift a little bit after that. So as you probably have heard, a ship which lost power crashed into the pillars of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland, causing the bridge to collapse. The cause of the collapse was not structural. The news reports have claimed that 6 construction workers are missing and presumed dead. And that's, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of those individuals. This is reminiscent of the time the 35W bridge collapsed. But that collapse was caused by structural.
Yes.
Design errors. Also, the right is now trying to blame Secretary Pete Buttigieg because they say that he had something to do with it, that he's just an incompetent.
Are you kidding me? I didn't hear that.
Yes, because he's the Secretary of Transportation, so he should be in charge of boats that lose power.
Sheesh, yeah.
Ay vey. Anyway, pick up the ball, somebody. I'm done with this crap.
First of all, just such a horrific and such a sad.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw the video of it, but it's just, it's so, you just like watch the ship come in. I watched it and I was like, oh my God, stop, you know?
Yeah,
and you see the bridge
it.
Just collapse like a toy.
But it hit the.
It's incredible and so horrific.
Yes. Apparently, they were trying to steer the rudder away from the pillar because if they can get it under the, between the two pillars, it wouldn't have, it wouldn't have done that much damage.
There's momentum.
The momentum.
It's tough.
Yeah, yeah. Anything to say about that?
There are many, many, many bridges. I think I read over 40,000 bridges in the United States that are considered, they rank bridges as good, fair, or poor. And there's like over 40,000 that are in the poor category. So those are like the top priorities for like infrastructure funding. This bridge was rated fair, so it wasn't bad. With that said, the way that they rate those bridges and the design specifications for them, I was reading I will give credit where credit is due. The Guardian has done some great investigative reporting on this. They're not designed to have or sustain an impact from these mega ship, cargo carriers, which have grown exponentially in the last decade in terms of getting way bigger and carrying way heavier, more cargo. And so at the time that these bridges, in terms of being rated and structurally sound, it wasn't to include the possibility of these big cargo freighters hitting them. And so it's again, like it wasn't a structural issue in the respect of like the bridge itself being bad, but also like failure of imagination and maybe failure to keep up with how we are dealing with more of these big cargo ships coming in and the possibility that it could hit a bridge like that. So it's a really tragic incident, but hopefully will have us reevaluating the future of how we transport goods and move things.
Yeah, well, they're saying they have the largest crane in the country. They're trying to get this stuff, and they're still it's going to be a,
oh, I'm sure.
a chore because they're going to have to cut it in smaller pieces to get the pieces wow. out. And they still haven't found the bodies of those workers. So
yeah.
let's hope the families can at least retrieve the bodies so that they can have a, you know, come to terms with it and be
yeah.
able to celebrate their life.
For sure.
Lives, I should say.
You know, to the Mayor Pete, I still call Mayor Pete, I guess.
That's fine.
Secretary of Transportation.
Secretary of Transportation, Buttigieg. you know, just to that point, we all want to point the finger of blame somewhere, right?
That's
just a thing.
What did he have to do with it?
Nothing. But that's the thing. It's easy to point the finger of blame, especially, you know, when you can make something like in the political sphere, it seems like everything has become political these days is kind of how it feels. And like someone's got to be to blame. Oh, great. We can blame this person. And to think that Pete Buttigieg had anything to do with that is absolutely asinine. And any logical person knows better. At the same time, the fact that that is happening, I think, is a tragedy, and it detracts from the actual tragedy.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And it's a disservice to those people who are
absolutely.
Involved in it and
absolutely.
Who are overcoming that trauma. So I just...
Matt, you hit the nail on the head. That's
yeah.
it.
The state of our political affairs right now, of that whole, like, you know, this side or our side and blame and, you know,
blaming.
Us versus them mentality, it's not getting us anywhere, but just, like, creating more hate and division.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
They had to use him as... But the fact that he's gay... I think has a lot to do with it.
That's a layer to it.
When
no
he
doubt.
Had to go on a paternity leave when he had those twins
yeah.
with his husband, excuse me. They made jokes about it. Oh, is he breastfeeding? Is he, you know, using
horrible
tropes mm-hmm. against him. And now this is just another one because he's the Secretary of Transportation. And had nothing. The ship had nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
It was an independent company that owned the ship. The power went out in the ship. He has no control of power in ships.
Exactly.
Please don't try to pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Right.
I'm done.
Let's stop creating conspiracy theories, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and it undercuts, you know, he's been on this issue since it first erupted. The federal government has been there. You know, President Biden, you know, we've had historic investment in infrastructure, which is not really a sexy issue that gets a lot of playtime. And
right.
it's I forget what the figure is, like $140 billion or something invested in infrastructure, like under Biden. And a lot of that is going to repair bridges around the country. So
yeah.
It's, you know, the administration, I think, has done a remarkable job in responding to this tragedy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so now we're going to move to uplift. We
Yay.
Have two
Good.
L. Yeah, we need to uplift. We don't want to.
The upright part of the show.
Yeah.
The upright. Philip Anthony is not a downer.
Right.
I'm not a Debbie Downer. I'm a Philly uppie.
You are.
Anyway, I love you guys.
We love
when
you
I,
too.
When I have you, when I have this show, the co-host show, it just makes my day. It really does. Thank you. So here's great news. According to a poll by the LGBT advocacy group GLAAD, Gay and Lesbians Against Defamation, 68% of those who identify as LGBTQ polled indicated they would vote for President Biden, while only 15% indicated they would vote for Voldemort. And then it rises even more. President Biden's support rises to 72%, while Voldemort goes down to 15. Well, it stays at 15% in battleground states. So that's good news.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. So thank you for the LGBT community that you have half a brain and you're doing the right thing. We love you.
Yes.
Tell the LGBT community.
We love you.
We do love you.
Yeah, we love
do.
You. And the second LGBT.
We're part of it.
We are you. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, and it's.
We are you.
It's,
yeah.
It's the base. It's
yeah.
the base.
yeah. When people ask me, are you gay? I said, no, my husband is. Anyway. that's what I say. Anyway, so the other good news is, as you know, I always do my best to talk about the LGBT community in an uplifting way. Washington State is the seventh state now to enact legislation mandating that public schools incorporate LGBTQ inclusive curricula in some capacity, according to the Movement Advancement Project. That's what it's called, the MAR, an LGBTQ think tank. The other six states are California, New Jersey, Colorado, Oregon, Nevada, and Illinois. Guess what? We're not one of them. So I'm hoping that if any of my legislators are listening, my dear fellers, get on it.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely. Guys? Absolutely.
Get on it. Mm-hmm. Because if other states could do it, and we're very blue here, do your thing, man. Do your thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, anybody want to comment or you want to go into your things?
No, I mean, that's fantastic news for Washington State. That's incredible.
But Minnesota needs to do it now.
Yeah.
It does.
You made a good point. We got to talk to our legislators. We got to
write letters.
Get our folks involved in making letters. Those choices and making those changes for us.
For sure.
Yeah.
Anyway. We've talked quite a few times on the show about how great Minnesota is. You know, like, let's keep it fantastic. Like, keep things moving. See people. Do things for people. It is fantabulous.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now we're going to get to the part of the show. We have 10 minutes in this segment, 10 minutes in the last segment, where my co-hosts take the ball and run with it and bring up the issues that are important in their bailiwicks. Is that a word, bailiwicks?
Yeah, yeah. It is.
Is it a plural to bailiwicks?
I think so.
Probably.
I hope so.
We're not going to Google it right now, so it's fine. No.
Well, so I guess we'll start with Austin because Austin is sitting to my left. She's right next to me. So
clockwise.
We'll do clockwise. Yeah, clockwise.
We just keep going left.
Yeah.
Yes. Go left, honey. Go left, young man.
Thank you. Anyway. I'm going to keep that.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So in terms of Minnesota stuff, there's definitely some exciting things happening. And I'm gonna briefly touch on kind of a fun one and then a little more serious one. So on the fun side, I'm sure we're all familiar with MyPillow's Mike Lindell. Who is having a bad year.
Year end day.
This is the fun one?
This is the fun one.
Oh, what you hear, honey?
I never want to take, like, you know, pleasure in somebody having horrible things happen, but Mike Lindell did this to himself.
Oh, yeah.
Consequences have actions, buddy. You promise a big prize for figuring out that the election wasn't stolen, and guess what? Now you got to pay up.
Mm-hmm.
So economically, not doing great, has been pulled from a lot of advertisers. Major retailers have dropped MyPillow. Recently, he was evicted from his warehouse here in Minnesota.
Shakopee.
In Shakopee, yep. And, you know, he's basically said, well, it's not my fault and not a big deal.
Finger blame.
Always
pointing
finger blame.
He's not paying the rent.
Yeah.
Hasn't paid the rent for months.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars,
yeah.
I heard.
Yeah, and, you know, he's like, well, we were going to sublease it, but then the person that was going to sublease pulled out. It doesn't matter. You signed a lease, buddy. Yeah. That's how a lease works.
Yeah. Money, 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 money. That's what they want.
Yes.
Add that to the playlist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Right, remember that song?
Yes.
I want money. That's what I want. The Flying Lizards, get that one on the show one day. Anyway. Any other things?
Yeah, I just all these businessmen that aren't great at business.
Could you talk about that thing about Lyft and Uber?
Yes,
please.
So Uber and Lyft, as I'm sure many people in the cities and the metro are aware of, Minneapolis City Council had passed a number of provisions that would require higher pay standards for Uber and Lyft drivers, rideshare providers, as well as requiring, this is the part that often gets left out, transparency. So when you get a receipt from Uber or Lyft, they need to show you a breakdown of how much is actually going to the drivers. This is not unique. There are many other cities across the country that have passed similar provisions, and this was supported by a huge coalition of people that drive for Uber and Lyft that got together and formed and organized and asked Minneapolis City Council to do this. And Uber and Lyft have said, we're pulling out, we're done, we're suspending service, you know, we're going to be gone, and you did this. And if you're an Uber or Lyft customer, you've been bombarded with emails and push notifications and all sorts of things begging you, you know, blame Minneapolis for this and call your legislators and get this changed. Here's what I'll say. I, like, obviously there are people that are going to be impacted by this and people that do rely on it for rideshare servicing and for a career. With that said, Uber and Lyft have threatened this in many other cities and haven't pulled out. And New York and Chicago is a fantastic case study that we're both looking at the same time of passing similar provisions. New York did. Chicago panicked and didn't. Surprisingly, Lyft and Uber rides stayed about the same price in New York and drastically increased in Chicago. So, yeah.
Why?
It's almost like transparency matters when you have to show where the money's going and in places where they have to show where the money is going, suddenly there isn't this massive price gouging. And maybe Uber and Lyft do pull out and say, hey, we're tired of these new provisions cropping up. We're going to put our foot down on this one. But there's a lot of other rideshare companies that have said, we're ready to move into the Twin Cities. The workforce is already in place. The market is already clearly there, and it's going to be wide open for them. So I think this is a great move, and I support Minneapolis City Council 100% on that.
Is it just the Twin Cities or the suburbs too?
Well,
will they be able to still operate in the suburbs?
So it's funny that you mentioned that. And I think Lyft has said they will still operate in and around the suburbs. And Uber is the one that said we're going gone completely.
From the state?
Like from the state. Okay. But the thing with that is I live in the suburbs and I've tried to take rideshare plenty of times and there's nothing available. Even trying to like book a Lyft sometimes, like in advance, there is nothing available.
Really?
Yeah. So it's one of those things that like... I mean, sure, you can threaten this, but y'all haven't been super reliable in the past either. So I totally support what Minneapolis City Council did. I think they've made a great step to protect workers.
And a lot of people are really pissed off at – oh, can I say that on the show?
Yeah, pissed is
okay,
fine.
Okay. At Mayor Fry in the city for that. But it's my understanding that Mayor Fry is asking for workers, these drivers, to just be adequately compensated by their – parent companies, by Uber and Lyft. And they're not.
They're not, yeah.
So really, you know, I think there are a lot of people that are criticizing Mayor Fry for doing, like, how dare you get rid of our ride shares? That's an important factor. And yes, it is. But he's looking out for the drivers and asking for adequate compensation, which is a fair thing to ask for demand.
I will also point out, so Mayor Fry actually vetoed this proposal, and it was over, like, the city council overrode it. He does not support this.
He does not support it.
He has stated he supports some kind of joint, you know, something where we work with Uber and Lyft to improve conditions, but he has not supported the measures passed.
They don't pay for their gas, you know.
Yeah.
When they drive you, they don't pay for that.
Yeah.
That's out of their own pocket.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a hardship for them. Anything else did you want to bring up about Minnesota politics?
Bring one more thing to
that. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Something I know about Uber and Lyft, too, is that a large percentage, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, so Google it at your will. There's a large percentage of people who use those ride shares that are part of the LGBTQIA+ community or minoritized communities. And so getting rid of these rideshare companies, if they are gone, there's socioeconomic impacts that are going to happen.
Yep.
There are people of again, minoritized communities that are going to be impacted by this as well. So there are huge impacts that are going to harm a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And the people who are making these choices are people that aren't necessarily in those circumstances. And that's what's really tough.
They'll have
to go
back to traditional taxis like that we had before. Oof. Uber and Lyft. You know, you call up a number and the car comes to your house, and they were way more expensive than I remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anything else do you want to feed the audience with?
I don't – that was kind of the two, I guess, main things. Trans Visibility Day was recently and was celebrated at the Minnesota State Capitol. And I know that Lee Finke has had a number of bills that are up this cycle, including one that would help provide economic assistance to people relocating to Minnesota to protect themselves or their trans children. So, you know, again, another example of where Minnesota is really leading the way on that issue. And I sincerely hope that those do pass.
Well,
absolutely.
Lee Finke, this is Philip Anthony. Please come on my show. I really would love to interview you. You're amazing. Anyway. That was my little NPR invitation to Lee Finke. We're going to move to Mr. Matt Amundson.
I actually want to continue because we have a couple minutes left in this segment. So I kind of want to uplift a couple of other Minnesota organizations.
Let's do it.
So I'm part of the – I'm a member of the Twin Cities Gay Men's Chorus. I'm a choir member. I don't know. I guess my title is.
Is it called the Gay Men's Choir now? Or chorus.
Oh God, I think it's the chorus. Don't stump me on air. Oh my God,
I don't know either.
Harold, if you're listening, I'm so sorry.
So we're both doo-doo-doos, so don't worry about it.
But you know, we just had our spring concert just this past weekend, and it was such a great turnout. Is that the Ted Mann Concert Hall on the University of Minnesota campus was beautiful. It's such a great turnout and such great crowds, and we have our next concert is going to be during Pride Month in June, and the theme of that one is really on body image and on you know, self-acceptance and self-love. So I'm really looking forward to that one as well. So nice. Really great organization that I, you know, I've only been part of this organization since August.
Okay.
So it hasn't been super long, but I've really enjoyed being part of it because of what the organization is trying to do to better not just the LGBTQIA plus community here in Minnesota, but just communities in general, doing some more reach out and support just the community that we all live in and that we're all from, and support this state where we know there are a lot of folks who are in our LGBTQIA plus community and that need that visibility and that support and that love. So I really enjoy that.
Yes.
One other super quick thing is the Pink Cloud Foundation. There's a guy who is on, Travis, who is part of the choir, and he runs that, and he is a wonderful human, and they do some really wonderful things to support.
Thank you for promoting that.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a quick break, though.
Let's do it.
And we're going to come back with more love, sweet love.
We'll try.
And with Matt Amundson, he's going to tell us some things about DEI that's going on in the Twin Cities and in the country. So I'm Philip Anthony. This is the Downright Upright Show here on AM 950, the progressive voice of
Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Love, sweet love, it's the only thing that there's just too little love, but the world needs
love. Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to love one another right now.
Welcome back to the Downright Upright Show. I'm Philip Anthony, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Matt Amundson and Austin Ballhagen, who are amazing human beings.
As are you.
Thank you.
I love them so much. I want to kiss them. Anyway, so we're back. And Matt, you had more information for our audience.
Yeah, I just want to just cap what I was saying about Pink Cloud Foundation, just given the adequate airtime it deserves. So this is just the basic description of it. It provides housing assistance, support services, and other critical resources to barriers for those seeking long-term recovery from substance use disorder. So they do a lot of really great work.
That's awesome.
It is. Yes. So this is smiling on your brother. This is spreading love and joy, right?
Yeah.
Supporting people. So
that's what the world needs now.
It is. Absolutely.
It's so love.
Twin Cities Gay Men's Chorus, Pink Cloud Foundation, and there are so many wonderful organizations out here, which is wonderful. And, you know, and so being aware of those and tapping into those and knowing that we have these spaces for people to go to during hardships or, you know, knowing that there are a lot of people just who struggle with all sorts of factors, and there are good people doing really good work is just really heartening. So
yeah, I had out front last week, a Kat Roan was on a guest on the show.
Yeah.
She is the chief executive president, I guess is the term, for Outfront Minnesota. And oh my goodness, did I fell in love with her. I mean, she's an
wonderful,
amazing human being.
Yeah.
I mean, the things that she does for our community, it's I can't even enumerate them. So again, thanks, Kat, for being on the show. Did you want anything else to talk about today, Matt?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Well, I told you, you were like, what topics are you thinking? I was like, well, last time we talked a little bit about implicit bias.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what if we talk a little bit about white supremacy? I know it sounds scary.
Oh, no.
But
I'm scared.
Here's the thing. What I want to do, remember, I do training in diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. So
yes.
I want to illuminate these issues so we can be aware of it, right? I'm not perpetuating white supremacy. I want to clarify that. I want us, in order to mitigate white supremacy values and issues, we need to create awareness of it, right? So that's really it. We'd also call it more dominant culture. More people are more comfortable talking about dominant culture rather than white supremacy culture. But I think also calling it what it is, which is white supremacy culture, is also pretty critical. But sometimes there's a misunderstanding of white supremacy being like it's just a white people thing. No, we live and swim in white supremacy culture regardless of race, color, creed, etc. So we just need to become aware of that. So I want to share with you some dominant culture characteristics. And actually, I was even thinking about some of these during our conversations earlier about news items that were kind of coming up. So I want to share a few things, and I want to hear from the two of you about kind of what stands out about these. So here are a few characteristics. So one is a sense of urgency. That's a dominant culture characteristic. There's a sense of we need to fix this right now. We need to do this right now. And there's no time like the present. And not thinking about long-term, is this going to make worse impacts, or what might the impacts be? How might the choices we make right now help or hurt us in the future? Instead, it's, this is happening right now, we need to fix it. So think about, like, in a work setting, think about this sense of urgency, thinking about, like, are the policies that we're providing, are they helpful? Are we learning from them? Are there things that we're doing that are adequate for what we do? Or are we just getting through the day as best we can and not actually thinking about the actions we make and the choices we make and the impacts that they have on other people? And so part of dominant culture is to not think but do. And that's kind of that idea of sense of urgency.
Mm. Thank you.
Another one.
How many are there?
Oh, there's a lot. So I'm only going to pick and choose a few. Another is either or thinking. Mm. So think a binary concept or binary construct, rather. So is everything simply right or wrong? Are complex things overly simplified? You know, we think, well, it has to be this or it has to be that. So we are, the three of us are on the LGBTQIA+ spectrum, right? So the three of us, and listeners, please listen, know that there is a spectrum. Right, we're all on a gender spectrum. We're all on a sexuality spectrum. There's not this binary, like man or woman or this or that or black or white, that's not cutting it anymore. If you look at that sort of way of thinking, is really harmful. If you look at Voldemort, I love you. You always say Voldemort, by the way. If you look at Voldemort and his behavior, a lot of things that he says and does are, you know, it's me, it's my way. Or, you know, it's this or that. It's
either highway.
Or. Exactly.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
Thank you. Now we got Harry Potter and Star Wars. I love this.
Well, yeah, we're getting into the sci-fi. No, but can I just ask you a question about
please.
That? Because you're the expert here.
I'm still a learner, but yes.
So the binary thing.
Yeah.
Now, you have people in our community, the LGBT community, who identify as non-binary.
Yeah.
They don't have identified as a gender or a sexual preference or, mm-hmm. you know, et cetera, et cetera. So is that something that you think needs to be eradicated? They need to stop the binary and where people can't, especially in our community, can't identify that way because that's why they call, you know, like they were talking about trans athletes and all this baloney. Can you pick the ball and run with that one?
Yeah, and actually I would love to hear from both of you on that because I love that. That question. Do you have any thoughts on that, Austin?
I recently had a really great teachable moment with somebody in one of my writing groups about what bisexuality meant and trying to explain that it does not mean bisexuality is a spectrum itself.
Yes.
And for some people, it does mean you're attracted to cisgendered men and cisgendered women. For other people, it can mean you are attracted to all of the above, including non-binary folks or agendered folks. There are third, fourth, fifth genders in various parts of the world that are recognized. It's gender is a really complex construct, and I love the way that you talk about it being
really
a spectrum.
It really is. Like pansexual is another one.
Yeah.
Where they don't, you know, bisexual, it's going like, I'm attracted to cisgender men, cisgender women. Mm-hmm. Pansexual, I don't care if you're non-binary, trans, whatever, I'm attracted to,
well,
to
and
you.
Well, right? Bisexuality can be attracted to more than just men and women. You can be attracted to non-binary folks as well.
So aren't they interchangeable pretty much, those
no,
two?
No, I wouldn't say that they are. So? Because with bisexuality, gender plays a factor or a role in that attraction, and with pansexuality, it doesn't. It's an attraction regardless of gender.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. See, folks?
We're
all
learners.
I'm an old
yes.
gay man. I'm learning as we go.
Yeah.
So
yeah. We're all learners.
We're all learners.
Absolutely.
We have another two and a half minutes.
I love this.
To go.
Keep rolling.
All right. Here's another one. Okay. So power hoarding.
What's it called?
Power hoarding. I think I kind of touched on this earlier. We were talking about power, right? This idea of power and oppression, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, is there a desire to share decision making? Are suggestions for change seen as threats to authority? Think about when you have a positionality of power, how do you share that power? How do you wield that power? When you think about so one thing that I often think about, and I kind of alluded to this earlier when it comes to you know, when I was mentioning this idea of power and oppression that really Donald Trump, Voldemort, is just sitting in, he just stews in, right? A lot of that is he knows he has the power to say, I don't like this person, and then everyone else is going to not like them too. let's attack this person. Everyone else is going to attack them too.
Like a gang mentality.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. That is an example of wielding this sense of power in a way to oppress, in a way to influence, in ways that negatively, harmfully impact other people, right? But we also have positive senses of power. Think about senses of power that we have just in how we interact in our relationships, like our friendships, in our workspaces, even in social settings. You know, we have the power to lift someone up, to say something positive. We have the power to harm somebody by saying something negative. We have the power to tip well or not tip well, right? Like we have choices that we can make that are power hoarding, that where we can control, you know, the choices we make and how they impact other people. And that awareness of that power is really critical, and just how we show up for the world and how we share that love, mm-hmm. how we share positivity.
Wow.
Very heavy stuff. Now, next month, you probably have more to talk about.
Oh, you have no idea. This could be an entire podcast, but we're going to need a seven-hour show. I'm glad we got to touch on a little. So just thinking about a few of these things, you know, and maybe just to share with all the listeners.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe the two of you just think, you know, like you can search dominant culture characteristics, white supremacy characteristics, and I guarantee you're going to see that we are all sitting in it.
Unfortunately, yeah. we're at the end of the show. And I would like to thank my guests. My co-hosts, I'm like, well, they're like,
thank you.
Austin Ball Hagen, Matt Amundson, you are the most amazing people I know. And you really do a lot for the community. You're doers, movers and shakers, I call you guys. So thank you so much for coming on the show. And to my audience, thank you for supporting the show. You know,
keep listening
every Saturday at 5 o'clock, clicking and doing all the fun stuff. Yeah. Bye now. Love you.
Bye.
Bye.